Welcome back to the Veteran Next Door Live. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and Ed Janod, you're helping me get the show done today. Appreciate it. We're talking about J.L. Tucker, who was a veteran who recently, he passed away in November. He was in Vietnam, served in Vietnam during the Battle of Idrang. Came home not physically wounded, but emotionally wounded because of the task that they asked him to do, which was to unload those helicopters that were full of KIAs, killed in action from that battle.
Last week of his life, learned a lot about him at the hospital with the family. And he had a nickname, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
What was his nickname?
Bull.
J.L. Bull Tucker.
You know, something else you don't know, that when he was there, when he would move around from warehouse to deliver stuff, they had to put sandbags in the bottom of the truck because they might hit a landmine. And they would know that if they hit that landmine, the sandbags might save their lives. He had to worry about, when he was driving from truck to truck, he had to worry about snipers.
Yes.
So anyway, while he was there was no battle on, but there were people out there trying to kill him, not him personally, but because he had a uniform on.
That's right.
So those are the things that he was dealing with. Before we get too heavy into this next conversation, I want to bring my friend Tom Mercer on just a minute. Tom, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Just sitting here hanging out, drinking a cup of coffee this morning.
Are you nothing to do? Pretty soon you got to get back in here and help me. What do you think about what you're hearing there?
I tell you what, I was turning the radio on just to listen to it, and I heard what you're talking about. You know, about that one battle. That was a terrible battle over there, boy. And I'm sure Bull Tucker, is that his name?
Well, J.L. Bull Tucker, yeah.
All right, well, that sounds like a tough name to have, you know?
Yes.
That was because he was bullheaded.
He was stubborn.
Tom?
Stubborn. My brother named him that.
Tom?
Yeah.
How were KIAs handled around you? I mean, if there was a KIA, was it just disappeared real fast, or?
Well, sometimes if we could get in there and get them real fast, we never left them, but if we could get them out real fast, we could. If it was a lot of fire coming in and a chopper couldn't get in, we couldn't get them out, but we took care of them. Believe me, they was like they were still alive. We kept a couple of men with them at all times. We didn't just leave them laying there, you know. And then when we could get a chopper in there, and sometimes the chopper, the medevacs or the chopper would come in anyway. We cherish those guys, you know, the ones that was KIA. We took care of them.
Did you ever think about what happened after the helicopter flew away?
Yeah, that'd be the last thing you see, that helicopter going away, wondering what was going to happen. And then you wondered about the family over back home, you know. Because usually around a KIA, there's a lot of buddies and a lot of friends and a lot of people who have a lot of feeling and went through a lot together. So, yeah, you always wonder what happened. And some people look them up, you know, or the family.
In your situation, it was just like one or two at a time, or were there ever...
at one time we had eight. That was at one time, but it was not a battle like Latrine. You know, it was, you know, that was something else.
So if you had a man who had a good heart and was sort of innocent and looked at that and started seeing it, not eight or ten, but maybe a couple hundred.
Yeah,
that would weigh pretty heavy.
Yes, that would. You know, just eight or nine or ten. Still weighs heavy on somebody's mind. It depends on how they were hit and how they were killed, and it takes a toll on you. I mean, you can have, like I've always told you, it don't matter what you were in or what you did during the war. If you saw something like that, like Bull Tucker did, it's going to weigh heavy on your mind. You're never going to forget that. And if you was a desk clerk and you came out to bring the mail out and saw something happen like that, you're not going to forget that. Something else.
J.L. didn't see the soldiers get killed. He could only imagine what happened to him when they brought him in.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying. It don't matter what you were doing. If you saw that, saw the bodies, that's what puts your mind in the gear of what happened. And he was just a tough guy. He could deal with it, but deep down inside, his body was paying the price for it, and his mind was, too.
It wasn't just the KIAs, either. It was the wounded.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yes.
And see, I never realized that. I never realized it was the wounded and the KIAs. I always thought it was they had separated them already.
No.
They just packed up the helicopter.
When our chopper come in, man, we put everybody on there. We put the bodies on there, and then the other guys would crawl in right behind. We dealt a lot with wounded. You know, we might have one or two KIAs at different times, but ours was mainly, a lot was wounded. Because if one of the enemy could kill or wound a soldier, it's going to take twice that many people to get him out of the way, so that's twice that many people they don't have to worry about.
Okay.
We put them all on one chopper.
So we got JL, and he came home, and he got married, and he had two children?
Yes. Well, he had three.
We have a younger brother.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ms. Tucker, you were dealing with a wounded veteran. You didn't have the skills to deal with it, did you?
No.
You just had to take it as it came?
Yes, yes.
And can you, the people didn't hear it first, what was coming, what was going on?
Well, he just withdrawed, you know, and just his nerves were so bad that he's always watching, you know, like something was going to happen to him, or you had to be very careful.
Paranoid.
Yeah, paranoid. He didn't want us to go anywhere because he was afraid something happened to us. And
well, that's what happened to him. You know,
uh-huh.
I mean, you know,
right.
As a young person, you know, he didn't know what was happening to those people, and it came in.
That's right.
Yeah, we have one of his grandchildren here, Tiffany. Hello, Tiffany.
Hi.
What do you think about all this? Are you learning new stuff today? What are you learning?
That he did stuff that nobody else could imagine doing, except for the people who was there. I guess it left a remark on his life and how he reacted to things.
He wasn't trained for it, and he just was thrown in there, and he had to just deal with it, didn't he?
Yes.
And he did his job, and to him, each one of those KIAs were whole families.
Yes.
And he brought that home. Christy, what are you thinking?
Well, I think about when you're talking about the bodies, the people that Daddy took care of and cleaned, and he talked about how he treated them with the utmost respect. And each one that came through, even though there were hundreds of bodies that they had to take care of, he remembered names. Not really just out of the blue, but we visited Fort Benning. We went back to Fort Benning in July this year. And they have the wall. And we went to the Vietnam part, and he was just pointing at names with tears because he recognized the names on the wall.
Oh, I think one other veteran said, I knew what he knew and he knew what I knew. Ed, some of the studies that I've done and working with you and stuff like that, one of the cures and ways to relieve post-traumatic stress disorder is advocacy. I think I learned that from you.
Mo Armstrong wrote a recovery manual for those out there who are part of LPG. For 1 year, we were on page 9. And the book is trying to explain and teach you why you might be angry, why you might be avoiding people. And we always just stuck on page 9. Once you start understanding what you have, why you're doing certain things, and how you might be able to help yourself, the next step, which is page 10, was blank. And I think Mo left it intentionally blank because it's a real big step. So we turn it to page 11, and on page 11 says, it's time for you to help others. And that's what the advocacy you're talking about. And that's what JL really found. Once he got together with his brothers and start feeling comfortable going through that pain, then to give him back, and I guarantee you, I'm looking at your faces now, mm-hmm. that was the miracle in him, right?
It was. You're right.
You're saying the miracle was that he saw that he could
help others.
Help others.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we call it strength-based recovery. So it's using our experiences, understanding each other, how you feel, what you've done to the family, mm-hmm. things you're not proud of. And so a lot of the guilt that we have is because of our actions and the actions we had in the past.
Okay. Well, we've got another young guest here. I think you've been our youngest guest so far in 5 years. Your name is JC. You say yes?
Yes.
Yes. And you're named after J.L. Tucker?
Yes.
Well, what do you know about your grandfather?
What?
It's okay. You can say anything you want to.
Tell him about Veterans Day at school.
Did your grandfather come to school for Veterans Day?
It's okay.
Go ahead.
What would you do for Papa at school? What would you put around his neck every year?
What is it called?
A medal.
You put a medal around your Papa's neck?
Yes.
And what would he do when he came to school?
He would smile big.
Hey, how about what you and your papa and your family did for Larry Clemmer? Do you remember Larry Clemmer? He was the he's a LERP Vietnam vet that was in the home near your home, and he used to take them what?
Milkshakes.
Milkshakes. Your papa. Who else went with you when you went to see Larry Clemmer?
Michelle, Tiffany, Zachary.
Wow, so he took almost the whole family, huh?
And even
Larry Clemmer, if you don't mind, he was one of our original 23 in Dr. Richardson's group. And I was just telling you at the break, Randy, you know, one of the great things about him is he hardly ever talked because he was really hurt. His job over there was a long-range reconnaissance. And they would go out, you know, 30 days by themselves, a 4-6-man team. And when Dr. Richardson asked us all, what is your safe place? Try to find a safe place. And his answer was a hot shower. And every time I take a shower and I feel good in there, I always remember him because he was out there in the jungle for 30 days without that. Talk about going to the recovery and giving back. That's what JL did. And he did more than just go there and give him a milkshake. You just heard from JC that the whole family was there. And that made a real big difference, not only to Larry, but Brenda, his wife.
Well, you know, I want to ask the three of you all a question right here. I'm going to let you take turns. But in one sentence, I want you to tell me who JL was before he sought therapy. And then in one sentence, I want you to tell me who he was after the therapy started working. So anybody, go ahead, Kristen.
Before therapy, I would have to say scared. No confidence, lost, probably the biggest thing. After therapy, he was outgoing. He found the love of God, which changed his entire life. Blessed, thankful.
Happy.
Happy.
Okay.
He loved life.
How about it, Miss Tucker? What do you think?
It's about the same as Christy. I mean, he was like he's rambling. Nowhere to go or whatever. But then after he had met the legacy peer, Ed and Freddie and all the other boys, he was just like a complete different person. I mean, he was he'd always been a good husband, but it was all that in his mind, you know, from before. Mm-hmm. But like Christy said, he met Christ and he lived every day for it.
There was a time that growing up where I guess this was probably not really growing up, but early adulthood, we actually went through a period where we thought Daddy would commit suicide before he got help. I mean, he was so down and out, there just didn't seem like there was any light at the end of the tunnel. We would actually go to see if the guns were still in the, if he would leave without, you know, telling us where he was going. That would be the first thing we would do, would be make sure that the guns were still where they were supposed to be. But there was a pretty bad period of time where we were just all scared for him.
How about Shelley?
Like, he had no meaning to his life before he joined it. Mm-hmm. And then after he did, he just parked up every day with a smile on his face, ready to start the day.
Yeah, it's like he found that his experience had a value that he could share with other people.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, he had something that, and it's like in The Wizard of Oz, he always had it.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't, you know, he didn't know.
Yeah,
didn't know who
that's
to
right.
go. You know, didn't know who to go for help.
That's right.
If he'd been helped 30 years earlier, you know, think about the impact that his life could have been. So, go ahead.
And we have a veterans treatment court. We do recovery for the SANS. SANS meaning Afghanistan and Iraq veterans. That's what we try to tell them. You don't have to have a life like JL, myself, and Freddie's.
Mm.
You got a chance to fix it now. Don't wait 40 years.
That's right.
So if you're a listener out there and you have a spouse who's going through this trouble, How do they get in touch with the Legacy Peer Group?
Just started a family services, and it's the spouses of veterans to support not only the Legacy Peer support, but also our justice-involved veterans that are in our veterans treatment courts. You can call our main number at 865-336-2624. Just let us know if you need some support. There's a lot of support out there for the veterans, and what we've learned, just like you heard from this family here, what they've gone through, and we are so blessed to have the women join this group. It just started on January 12th.
The women's family support group. Family support group.
Yeah, that's underneath the Legacy Peer Support Group for the families.
Are you guys participating in that? Or
Christy's going to be one of the facilitators. She knows what it's like to be a daughter or a veteran with these issues. She's going to be elected February to our council. I was there with her when her dad was laying in the hospital bed, and her and Shelly kept saying, "We're not going to forget what you did. We're going to continue what you did." We're honored for her to join, just like we were honored for JL to accept the vice president job. And then she's going to be part of our family support group. That's more advocacy, right?
Yeah, more advocacy. So are you going to be the organizer or the leader? Or
we have Luann Lovin, Cheryl Davis. They're going to be the chair and the co-chair.
Is Lefty Wallace involved?
Lefty Wallace is going to be there. Chris, we're already starting the process and have quite a few families, from children all the way up to grandparents. So you never know who needs the help.
Well, you know what I'm learning here is if, you know, you keep thinking my returning soldier has a problem, like they're sick, and they're wounded and they may be sick, but they have done something that they didn't intend to do when they went in that changed the way they feel and the way they think, and that you're saying just letting it out?
Letting go of a lot of people have hypervigilance, like you were talking about, being afraid, paranoid, the numbing, you don't want to remember it, self-medicating, all that type. And it's really hard when it comes out. Understanding what happened and that you're not alone, you're not by yourself, and you shouldn't live in your head. That happened decades ago. And for the returning men and women, it's over. Your worst nightmare happened there. And that's one of the real hard things to let go, that your nightmare is still in your head.
We're going to have to go to the weather report and have a little news break, and then we'll come back to the last part of the show. But